Look, up on the slopes. What is that? Well, it looks like a pair of cross-country skiers going downhill. No, it must be some alpine skiers with broken bindings. Wait, on closer inspection, it's...
those telly guys.
Good morning or good evening, folks, and welcome to episode 17 of Those Telly Guys. I classify myself as a part-time dirtbag for about 8 years now. My name's Sam Ferguson, and welcome Richard Wilson and Morgan Clark. Morgs, how are you going?
Yeah, I'm good, Ferg, and gee, I tell you what, it is great to have you on the cast, mate. It's been so long, and yeah, how are things over in South Australia? How have you been?
Things have been pretty sleepy over here, as per usual, the city that never wakes. just been keeping myself busy by climbing rocks is the main thing. Rocks and school has been keeping me busy. So I was hoping to have a couple of weeks of spring / skiing over there, but looks like it'll have to wait till next year. I'll be saving all my coins. Apparently this episode's going to help me.
Yeah, and we'll have to throw to Rich now. How are you going, Rich? Can you give us a situation report of the latest conditions this week up in the northeast?
I can, Morgs. It has been nice. We did have some fresh snow, and it was lovely on Tuesday. I did hurt my back a little bit, though. That was a bit of a downer. So I have been resting up for some backcountry turns, possibly in the next couple of days. It looks like it's going to be pretty good if there's any snow left. But yeah, Ferg, we did plan to get a corn harvest in, but unfortunately, yeah, that'll have to wait till next year. But did you get any laps in at Mount Theberton at all this season?
Mount Theberton laps are still at zero this year.
Oh, jeez.
Unfortunately.
When was it that you went ice skating there, Ferg? Didn't you go ice skating there, or was that last season?
Yeah, I think that was about 18 months ago that I went ice skating there. So, yeah. Can't count them for the turns this year, unfortunately.
We at least did get a day in earlier in the season, which is, I think, more than last year. So, I mean, that's a positive, I guess.
Absolutely, yeah. I think I managed 3 days, actually. I was pretty happy with that. A couple of days at Hotham and a day at Falls Creek, and I was a happy man to be back up in the mountains. So, yeah, it was great to get out with you, Rich. And even it sounded like the snow was pretty good this week, was it, that little fresh dump?
Yeah, it was pretty good. There was a raging southerly that kept the snow pretty good. So, yeah, a lot of people were happy to be frolicking in the snow. Obviously, the resorts are running at a very restricted capacity to what they usually would be running, but it's open and, you know, we're pretty happy that we're so lucky to be skiing. So, yes, thank you, Falls Creek and Hotham, for opening, and Buller. Forget Buller, that's open as well.
Yeah, yeah. I tell you what, it was bitterly cold during that that system that moved through, fellas. Tell us, Ferg, it must have almost been snowing up at Mount Lofty during the week.
I didn't manage to get up there for the snow report, so perhaps it did. Perhaps I missed the boat on that one, so you never know, Morgs, but I did have to pull out a light fleece, which is rare for Adelaide. So, yeah, how was it in Melbourne? Bit chilly?
Yeah, it was pretty fresh. They were talking on the news about the potential of it snowing on Mount Dandenong, which is very close, sort of somewhere nearby my part of town. And I'm not sure whether that happened. They might have had a few flakes of snow, but certainly some of the larger mountains around, like Donabuang et al., would have received a light dusting of snow. How low down the hill did it snow for Falls Creek, Rich?
Oh, yeah, down just past Howmans. So it didn't get as low as they originally were forecasting, but
that's still well above 1,000 metres, so not super low.
Yeah, but surprisingly stayed dry for that day. But the biggest talking point of this week actually wasn't snow up around the mountainous traps here. It was the great earthquake of 2021. Did you guys feel the earth move under your feet?
Yes, and the sky. came tumbling down. Oh, it came tumbling down. No, the sky didn't come tumbling down, but the windows in my house came a rattling, and a few books on the bookshelf that I'm looking at right now did tumble over and almost fall off the shelf. So
we will not forget.
I had to correct that little situation, but yeah, it was quite amazing. I'd actually had a bit of an ordeal that morning. With a Wednesday, this occurred, I believe. I flooded the laundry because there was a cloth blocking the sink.
Oh no!
In the laundry where the washing machine drains into. So I flooded basically half of the house. I'd started dealing with that, and then like, this is not related to skiing at all, but I'll tell this story regardless. So I actually, so I started mopping that up, and then I went to put my coffee in the microwave because, of course, at this point it had gone cold, and I just went to press 20 seconds. And then anyway, I went back to mopping up the water in the hallway. And about 5 minutes later, I thought, well, why is the microwave still going? Turns out I'd pressed 20 minutes. So then my coffee had exploded everywhere. And now the kitchen smelled like burnt coffee. So I was having a pretty average start to my day. And then by the time I finally spent about... And then I'd spent about an hour mopping up the water, made myself a new coffee, walked back to my desk here in this spare room, study, whatever you want to call it, to sit down. And then everything started rattling, and I thought, well, I've stuffed up the water pipes in the house. It's because it sounded like, you know, when you turn a tap on like halfway and they're old dodgy taps and they start shuddering. It sounded like that at first, and I thought, oh god, like I've destroyed something in the piping or the plumbing. And then it became evident that it wasn't just my house that was shaking, it was everyone's house on the street. And that was when I sort of realised that it was an earthquake.
Did you feel it, Ferg?
No, I did not. Feel it. I was going to say some silly story that my epic past was dislodged off the bookshelf, but just to remind me that I only had 3 days on it. But no, we did not feel it this far away. Morgs, I thought you were going to say that the drain was clogged with a cloth and that the earthquake dislodged that cloth and helped drain all that water out of the laundry, but unfortunately it wasn't that good of a story.
An act of God, perhaps.
yeah,
that would have been good, but not to be. What about Mount Beauty, Rich?
Yes, the ground definitely shook here. I really didn't know what was going on for a period of time. As the listeners know, I have been renovating extensively in the last 18 months. So at one point I was questioning just how many nails I did put into the framing as the house started shaking. Yeah.
The ultimate test of building.
Yeah, it took me by surprise. I was a bit like a deer in the headlights. I was shocked, and it reached its crescendo, I suppose, and then backed away. But there, you know, it was about 30 seconds into it, I was about to yell out, get out of the house, but it all was fine. Yeah, but definitely was weird.
You would have probably almost been closer to the epicenter, Rich, up at Mount Beauty, as the crow flies, I suppose.
Yes.
With it being sort of in, like, Woods Point, that's sort of somewhere in between Mansfield and Licola, isn't it, in the hills there?
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, the lights were swaying from the ceiling. And the cutlery and the crockery was definitely clattering around. And apparently that's a sign of level 4 or whatever, how they class earthquakes.
The Richter scale.
Richter scale. Mm. Level 4 on the Richter scale. Yeah, it was interesting. But anyway, everyone survived. But apparently people were just fleeing half naked out of buildings at Falls Creek. So that would have been a pretty funny sight, not to make light of earthquake situations. They did the right thing. But, there was definitely a lot of people running out stark as in fear of the whole building collapse. And it would have been, you know, we live in a two-story house, so, you know, the second story might have moved around a bit more. I can't imagine being on the top level of one of those Falls Creek apartments. That would have been swaying around like a leaf in the breeze, I imagine. But,
Some of those buildings would have seen a bit of rocking in their time, though, I'm sure. So,
it's Especially the one that houses all the seasonal workers, Ferg. Are you speaking from experience there?
Yeah. Yeah, speaking from experience, is normally every night it gets rattled by a level 2.1, I think.
Yeah, there were accounts of lifties just banging on the wall saying, can you keep it down, not knowing it was an earthquake. Anyway, Morgs, what are we talking about this week in this episode?
Well, today, Rich, the reason that we've got to this topic that I'm about to announce is due to everything that's sort of come to a head in 2020 and 2021 here in Australia, and that is the fact that we haven't been able to ski and the fact that, you know, people's lives have been affected by the pandemic. There's a chance that people might have been affected financially by the pandemic. And as we know, skiing, and in particular resort skiing, is often a fairly costly activity, especially when you do other things that I know we like to do and a lot of other skiers like to do, and start going skiing overseas or taking your kids, if you have them, on a long skiing holiday. So today we're going to look at how can we be the best dirtbag skiers.
Cause I'm just a skiing dirtbag, baby. Yeah, I'm just a
skiing
dirtbag, baby.
Cooking hot dogs in kettles, maybe for tea. Ooh.
So, Ferg, would you like to talk us through, for listeners that aren't familiar with the term dirtbag, what does the term dirtbag mean to you?
Dirtbag means living as frugally as possible and not really caring about one's perception of their self.
Nice, I like that.
Great description.
Yeah, that's,
great description.
Yeah, that's straight from the Oxford Dictionary. Yeah. No, that's from my dictionary.
Which, yes, we all know you have that on hand regularly.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah. Being an English teacher and all. Mm.
Yeah. That's my definition. You put me on the spot there, Morgs. But Rich, do you have any elaborations on that?
No, I think you've hit the nail on the head there. Maybe I'll just give a quick rundown of some of the topics we'll be talking about today and we can dive straight into it. So, yes, we're all about saving money for next year. And the topics we're going to cover are transport, accommodation, food and drinks, equipment, ski passes and entertainment. And we'll all shed some light on personal accounts, I suppose, to how we've saved money in the past and how we're going to do so in the future. And this can apply to local trips, which, let's be realistic, that's probably the most realistic outcome for most of Australians heading to the snow. But there might be a chance that we'll head overseas. And if we do, we'll definitely be needing to save some money over there.
Yeah, if they get that Trans-Tasman bubble up and running again.
Oh, that would be fantastic. Yes, to head over to New Zealand. So why don't we kick it off with the first topic of transport. Morgs, what are your thoughts on that? How can you save a few dollary dues by being the best dirtbag possible on transport?
Okay, well, here's my number one tip, fellas, and that is that when you are going on an overseas skiing holiday, a lot of the time you're going to have to hire yourself a car. And I'm speaking from experience here. I've been on many overseas ski holidays and on most of them, I have hired a car. Now, my advice would be that you hire the cheapest car possible. Now, obviously, looks can be deceiving on the website when you are selecting said cheapest car possible. Sometimes they don't even have a picture. Sometimes the picture is misleading. Sometimes the make and model of car that you are looking to hire does not exist in your country of origin, such as the Toyota Vitz. In Australia, it is known as the Toyota Yaris. But anyway, you're obviously going to save a whole lot of money by getting the cheapest car possible, but that's obviously going to come with a few challenges. So, for example, when us three were in Japan a couple of years ago now, which is a scary thought to think that it was that long ago,
yeah, right before COVID kicked off.
Yeah, we hired the Toyota Vitz up on the island of Hokkaido in Japan, which is, as I just mentioned before, we know that as the Toyota Yaris here in Australia. And I did just Google a photo that I'm looking at now. If you can imagine the smallest type of Toyota Yaris as well, because I'm sure there's a few different variations. yeah, basically a shoebox of a car. That was what we had. And we are three strapping young lads, fully grown men, and we had a lot of stuff with us, and we tried to jam it into this very small car. And that's not the first time that this has happened in my experience as well. Ferg and myself were in New Zealand many years ago, and we hired a Hyundai i30 and crammed everything into that and lived out of that for 2 weeks. So it can be done, and it definitely will save you a lot of money, on which you can proceed to spend on beer and lift tickets, which is always a bonus.
And I believe that the New Zealand story had a little bit more to it. When day one, we were driving up towards Mount Hutt, and we had the chain break on us, so one of the snow chains, and I believe you fixed it with a handy keychain off the keys of the car or something, didn't you, Morgs?
That's true, yeah. So it was, I was actually was reminded of that story a few weeks ago when I was on a ski, cross-country ski trip for school. And, yeah, we had, because they gave us ladder chains down in Mansfield, and because I hadn't used ladder chains since that trip to New Zealand. I didn't even know they were still in operation here in Australia. I didn't know people were still able to use them, but apparently you are at Mount Stirling and Mount Buller for the time being, sorry. Yeah, I was reminded of that fact that was literally the first time we'd put the chains on. And if my memory serves me correctly, we were kind of stitched up because they were making everyone put chains on at the very lowest bay. And there was basically no snow at all. Like, there was not even any snow in the car park at the resort. So I don't even know why we had to put them on.
Never be too safe.
And we had to drive at about 20 kilometers an hour for, 25 kilometers to get up to the resort. And after about 1 or 2 kilometers, we heard this awful banging sound. And it turns out that one of the ladders from, one of the rungs, I suppose, from the ladder chains had become disconnected from the next link. And we had to repair it with one of those round keychain things that you use to connect your, little fluffy small teddy bear to your car key.
I've got another tip for transport, if you don't mind me sharing it, gentlemen.
Oh, please, please, please.
So I won't name any names, of course, of any resorts or towns or places or people, but there was, if you trawl websites for long enough, you can generally find small loopholes in resort entry markings or fees and just fine print. And a resort a number of years ago was letting vehicles with one passenger in at a half price, which was excellent, because each vehicle that I went up in each day only had one driver. And there was two people in the car, though, and one of them got crammed into a ski bag for the drive up the mountain.
So, at what point did they get in the ski bag is what I don't know. Was it like you do paper, rock, scissors down at the various town and, they get shoved in and have to stay there for 30 Ks up the hill, or is it you're ducking off the side of the road just before the gate?
Yeah, generally the driver takes command and tells the other person to hop in the ski bag.
Yeah.
They don't take any, there's no swapping around or letting, each person have a go each day, but the owner of the vehicle takes command and tells the other person to hop in the ski bag. And it's generally probably about 15 odd kilometers from the top. They'll have to hop in there, which depending on your speed, probably 20 or 30 minutes cramped up in a double ski bag, of course.
I'm assuming this bag isn't strapped onto the roof, Ferg, or are they?
That probably would make the story a little bit better, wouldn't it? But no, safely inside a car. And we'll leave it at that, shall we?
Yeah, well, that's a great tip for people looking to save a bit of coin in future. Probably really only applicable here in Australia, I suppose, isn't it, where the resorts like to charge people for entering the resort to start with. But yeah, that's a great, not a great tip. That's a very unsafe tip, Ferg. But
I suppose the tip is to look look for fine print in the website. Make use of that fine print.
I think they have abolished the one person in a car gets half price deal these days. I think they've realised that carpooling is the way forward.
Yeah, it's just, I had in my notes then when Ferg was talking that it just seems so counterintuitive. Like, why would you reward people for not looking to, link together and, I guess, take up less spaces in the car park up at the resort? Like, yeah. I'm not trying to single out any resorts here, because we know that in Australia and anywhere in the world, car parking in ski resorts is generally fairly limited. So what, like, it just doesn't make any sense. Like, surely you would say if you have 24 people in your car, you get in for free and we'll actually pay you or something like that. Like,
just start hiring you as a bus company. Thank you very much for bringing all these people up. We really appreciate that. Yes, and as you said, there's some good tips there on transport. And I guess the last thing I would say, and I know this is frowned upon in Australia, but I have always saved a dollar or two by hitchhiking. Now, that's not exactly COVID friendly, but hopefully in the double jab world, that will be smiled upon once again, and we'll see our regular hitchhikers sticking their thumbs out looking for a lift up or down. So that's something I would recommend.
Yes. All right. So the next topic that we're looking at, fellas, is we're looking at how to save money on accommodation. So did you have any to start off with, Rich?
Well, I guess it ties into possibly transport as well. But when Nicole and I went and did a trip in New Zealand, we definitely saved a lot of money by hiring the smallest van that we could afford. That was a Juicy van. And it had to be self-sufficient to Freedom Camp. So it had to have a grey wastewater system and a toilet. Oh, yes. We didn't really use the toilet at all. Well, it's strictly number ones. No number twos allowed in said toilet. But you can Freedom Camp in a lot of spots there. So definitely recommend, you know, if it's a destination as New Zealand is, get a Juicy van, fill it up with everything you've got. And yeah, you can definitely save money by just pulling up the side of the road and wake up to the beautiful views of Mount Cook, which is fine. Did you guys ever have any troubles setting up your tent anywhere when you guys were doing that in New Zealand?
Yeah, I was just thinking about that actually. And I definitely recommend the van option in New Zealand in winter, because me and Morgs, we did take the tents and we did tough it out in our little Ford Fiesta. And
Hyundai i30.
i30, was it? Yeah. Little diesel nippy car. And I think we figured out that we were perhaps the only people car camping on the South Island in July.
Absolutely.
And one morning we pulled off, I think we were on our way to Queenstown, and we went over a pass and we pulled off on the side of the road and down this dodgy little alleyway that gave us free camping. But anyway, we set up the tent, and in the morning it took us a while to get going. And I think it took us 8:45 or something to get in the car and get going after packing up the tent. And I was like, why is this taking us so long to get out of bed? And I think I left my watch out on the car, which had the thermometer on it. And while we were packing up, it was taking the temperature. And at the end, I picked up my watch and it said -11.
Yeah.
I think that answered why we were so slow to get out of bed and get going that day.
Yeah, I'm glad that you brought up that story, Ferg. I actually watched the video. I had like a couple of little GoPro videos from that a while ago. It was in that pass in between Wanaka and Queenstown, the high road up where Cardrona and that, what was it called? Like the proving grounds, like the Southern Hemisphere proving grounds, where they have to test all cars that are going to be sold in the Southern Hemisphere for their ability to drive in winter conditions. But yeah, we camped somewhere near there and it was just ridiculously cold. And also I remember camping at that place near Arthur's Pass. And then when the blizzard came in, we had to find some random accommodation. But that's a whole nother stack of stories for another day. Ferg, do you have any other tips that you can give us for low cost or zero cost camping on your way to going skiing somewhere?
Oh, accommodation. Apart from tapping into friends that perhaps live in areas like Mount Beauty, Toowong South. Definitely knowing the area around the ski resort helps, and having a good idea of the climate, and yeah, finding spots to pitch the tent. The tent is an amazing piece of equipment to give you free camping. Near Mount Hotham, I probably can't actually.
Yeah, don't disclose.
Say it or not, it's a secret, top secret campsite. But if you drive a certain direction off the hill, you can be camping in green grass within 10 or 15 minutes from skiing waist deep powder at Hotham Resort. So there's definitely, if you know the area quite well, you can definitely pitch your tent in a pretty nice little area. Perhaps another great accommodation tip is, generally, if you're not camping, you don't want material over your head, ideally. I mean, that's a last resort. If you can get a solid roof over your head, then that is preferable. And sometimes we make decisions in a hurry and camp and sleep in public toilets, Morgs. And perhaps that's one way to save a dollar or two. I won't name any towns or any people, Morgs, but it was a good experience, wasn't it, until we got woken up at 5 a.m.
Yeah, something I'll never forget, mate. And yeah, please don't do this if you are listening. But that is a dirt bag memory from the years gone by, back when Ferg and I had close to $0 to our names, I would have thought. And being our poor uni students looking for a way to cut costs on our way to going and seeking some of that fresh powder in an unknown location, we decided to camp in a public toilet and were booted out in at Sparrow's Fart in the morning, and sort of had to drive around the countryside for 2 or 3 hours waiting for the sun to rise so that we could head up the hill. But yeah, that was definitely one way to save a few dollars.
So who kicked you out?
I think it was the caretaker or something. Yeah.
Unwanted room service.
That is an early cleaner to get in. 5 a.m. And I guess the last little accommodation tip is, obviously, you know, I'm not one to plan in advance, kind of booking places, you know, based on weather reports and where the snow is good. And that is exactly what we did in Japan. And quite often, you might not get what you dreamt of initially, but we did get a lovely pension in Japan in the town of Lake Toya, and was able to rest our weary muscles each night in the tranquil waters of beautiful onsen. But yeah, like you said earlier, we had to read the fine print, don't you? Because we ended up paying onsen tax upon our departure.
Yeah, stitched up. That was a big tax. It was good being able to just walk around in a bathrobe throughout the halls of that hotel, though, wasn't it? With a breeze blowing on your bottom, and you just walk past the friendly hotel staff.
Yes, probably getting every tradition wrong. Yeah. But yes, a memorable experience is what I was trying to get at. If you quite often go with the flow and end up going to somewhere that you weren't initially planning on, you'll probably come out with a funnier story. And we did have some laughs in Lake Toya. Good times down there. Anyway, what about food and drinks, gentlemen? How can you save a few dollary doos?
Yeah, I'll kick us off here. Thank you, fellas. My memory goes back to Mount Perisher a few years ago, and this is also with you two and with Nicole as well, and some other telly hounds, if you will. And yes, of course, us telly skiers are stereotypically, I guess, referred to as dirt bags often, the lentil munchers looking to save a bit of coin here and there. And a classic tip that I can give people is, if it's a lovely sunny day, why don't you go and cook up your lunch on the tailgate of your car in the car park, which we did at Parrish. We pulled out the gas stove, we turned it on, and we made some cheese toasties in the car park, and it was great. So that's a good way to save money, especially in Australia where the food is just out of this world expensive.
Ridiculous.
Ski resorts. Like, it's just not even worth thinking about buying your lunch every day if you're going skiing for a whole week or for 2 weeks.
Absolutely. And there's no better car park to do that than the Parrish car park. Is it the biggest car park in the Southern Hemisphere, I reckon? My hot tip for food and beverage choice is, obviously my beverage of choice is port, the fortified wine. And the food of choice for the ski lunches is pack a hot thermos, a liter will do it. And you want the mee goreng to give you the vitamins and minerals to get through the afternoon. And you whack in a little bit of tuna for a bit of protein. We all need muscle development. And so that's my hot tip for the hot lunch. And generally, you go into the biggest shared eating area or cafe that you can find so that you're least likely to get kicked out. The smaller the eating area, the more likely you are to get kicked out. Whereas if you go to a big one, they don't. You just blend in.
Jeff, thoughts on mixing Deb instant mashed potato in with mee goreng food?
I've never tried that before. That would...
Your eyes have just lit up, haven't they?
I don't know. I don't know if they have or not. It'd be a big pile of glop in your tin, wouldn't it?
I don't know.
I'll give it a try.
It was good that you mentioned tuna, though, because whenever I think of you and our, sort of dirtbag adventures together, Ferg, I often think of just eating tuna and pasta and how many times we've sustained ourselves on that. That's a great meal.
Generally a bit of cheese on top as well.
Of course.
What about international adventures now? I've already shared the story earlier this season about cooking hot dogs in a kettle in Japan. Whatever dogs they were, I'm not sure if they were real hot dogs, but save a few dollars there by making your food with the equipment that you have in whatever pension you have accidentally selected to use as accommodation. But what about when you're heading out to the ski resort and you see an establishment where you might grab some food? Now, in this case, in Japan, it was Lawson, Family Mart, and a few others, of course. There's lots of them. What are you looking for when you go into these stores?
Mate, the first thing I'm looking for when I walk into a convenience store in Japan is I'm looking for a geometric shape beginning with T, and it is wrapped in plastic, and inside that plastic is a sweet, sweet layer of seaweed. Yeah, the sushi triangles. We don't actually know what they're called, but oh my god! But we used to play this game in Japan, didn't we, fellas? It was called "How many sushi triangles can you stuff into your ski jacket for a day of skiing?" I think the record was like 27 or something, wasn't it, Fer? Like,
32. Well, the funny thing is that you end the day with just as much packaging in your jacket as when you started, because there's a layer of plastic separating the seaweed from the triangle. So that's all I remember, is peeling back millions of layers of plastic.
Yeah.
I have fond memories of when you got those 32 triangles in your jacket. And of course, you know, as is the custom in Japan, when you're exercising such a sport, you have to count in Japanese, and we were all yelling out very vividly, you know, ichi, ni, san. It was a great time. Yes, but I think what we're getting to is, yes, finding the cheapest kind of convenience store you can find and stuffing in your jacket various treats. In Japan, it was the sushi triangles. In New Zealand, it was cookie time for me. I survived on cookie time when I needed a snack going up the chairlifts, and I did not want to stop. Yeah, find whatever you can, and that'll get you through until your next thermos meal in the evening when you're sheltering in a toilet somewhere.
I think the great thing about the, you know, the triangles and, you know, cookies in New Zealand is that you know, often when you're skiing overseas, you're on, I always find, except for when you've bought a season pass and you're at home, when you're skiing in a resort, you feel like you're constantly trying to get more and more runs in because you want to get value for money. Yeah. And being able to, yes. And for example, if I think back to when we were at Rizutsu in Japan, this is just one example, but there are many ski resorts all around the world where this might be the case. It's so far to go back to like the main resort where you can buy food. So it would inconvenience you so much to stop for lunch, and you feel like you're missing out on, you know, like 2 hours of skiing just by stopping for lunch. Therefore, if you take triangles and put them in your pockets, then, you know, you've just gained an extra hour and a half of skiing.
I would give the hint, maybe the tip, I should say, to count how many triangles you have and remember where they're stored, because I'm pretty sure I go back to Australia and found some rogue sushi triangles stored in various locations I forgot about.
Is that how the coronavirus made it to Australia?
Yeah, so I did have some bat onigiri. It was heavily frowned upon. Look, I didn't make it. It was in the store. I just thought it was something unusual and different. I was into, you know, joining in with all the cultural aspects of the destination I am traveling to. Anyway, moving along, drinks, guys, drinks. How do you save on it? You know, a delicious drink at the end of the day. What are you looking for?
Just to go back to Japan again, it's got to be the hot beverages in a can from a vending machine, fellas. What do you think?
Oh, yes, they did. They were very nice just to have on the gondola ride up. Just a Boss coffee. Yeah.
They've even made their way to Australia now, which is fantastic. So I hope to see some of those vending machines in my neighbourhood in the not-too-distant future.
Don't need to go back to Japan then. We're all sorted. Walk the streets of Melbourne.
Yes, we just need a winter wonderland here with snow on the streets.
Righto. What about next topic, equipment? How can you save some money on some equipment?
Well, the one that springs to mind for me straight away, guys, is, of course, and in our group chat, this is a semi-regular feature whenever it pops up, and it's got to be the Rhythm Snow Sports sale, because as we all know, every year it seems to be around the same time of year, the 22 Designs axles go on a ridiculous sale.
Oh, no, Morgs. You said it. I've been trying to hold this back all season. I've stopped it, but I don't think I can fight it anymore. Why did you have to say it? Why? Why? Yeah, it's like Christmas Day. You just wait for that time of the year to come around, and it's happening right now, everyone. Get your axles.
Yeah.
On sale.
Yeah, it's like 30% off or something, isn't it?
Rich must just clear out his shed just for a 10 by 10 metre square area that he stores his axles in for the next year. Wouldn't you, Rich, for that sale?
Absolutely. I would be lying if I didn't buy something from Rhythm this year. I won't say what that is, but there's some space being cleared for some additional gear for sure. Yeah, so looking for a bargain, Morgs, I would add to saving some money would be buying secondhand gear. Looking on Facebook Marketplace, now is the time to do it as well. People will be getting rid of their old stuff, and just keep a good lookout throughout the season, or throughout the summer season, I should say, for people offloading stuff for the up-and-coming season. Ferg, you got any tips on that?
My only extra one to add is that, once again, it comes from university days when I took to my bellow protectors were wearing down, and I took to Bunnings with $5 and bought a dustpan, and I think I had a hacksaw or something, and I managed to hacksaw down this dustpan, which was essentially just a big chunk of plastic. And I made some new bellow protectors out of that for my telly boots. And I've always got the question, what are those big blue things on your boots? And so they've hung around for quite a few years. I think one of them is just broken, actually, just recently, but like earlier this year when I came skiing. So they've hung in there pretty well. I think I've got a couple of seasons use out of them.
So, yes, definitely fix up your own gear with some creativity and whatever you can find in your local hardware shop that might replace various pieces of equipment on your boots or skis or poles or helmet even. Just joking. You probably should use appropriate safety gear. We got anything more to add there, Morgs?
No, I don't have anything else here.
All right. What about ski passes?
I've got a great one to kick us off, lads, with ski passes. And this goes for anyone out there that may be studying at the moment, whether that be at a school or at a tertiary institution of some kind, or whether you have previously studied at a university or some sort of institution. And I'm basing this recommendation off my personal experience of skiing in another country. My most successful time was skiing in New Zealand in doing this, and that is using your student ID or your library card to get yourself a sweet, sweet little discount at the ski resort. Now, depending on which uni you went to, your student card may or may not have an expiry on it. So whether or not you are studying, you may be able to get away with getting a discount, as I did at some point in the past.
Yes, I would be lying if I said I didn't take advantage of my primary school library card in New Zealand.
Your primary school library card.
No expiry date. Definitely student rates.
Yeah, Richard Wilson, 6B. Yeah.
yes. No, my TAFE card at the time did not have an expiry date, and managed to get a few cheaper days. And this was some years ago now, so it was quite affordable at that time, based on half price lift tickets. They're definitely not as expensive as they are now. Yes. I guess one other way of avoiding expensive lift passes is to get out and exercise your way into the ski resort. Sorry, you may not be able to use the chairlifts, but you might be able to if the ski resort doesn't seem to mind, like be able to skin up. I only recommend this to people that know how to use skins and can actually ski. Obviously not great for a beginner, but that is one way to save a few dollars, go cross country.
Yeah, or just go cross country skiing or backcountry skiing straight up. Just don't even, if you're looking to save a few dollars next season and you're, you know, a pretty confident skier, I'd say get yourself a pair of pattern based skis, or get yourself a set of touring bindings and a set of skins and some camping gear, and get out there and get amongst it, you know, in the backcountry. And I'm sure we'd all advocate for that, wouldn't we, fellas?
Absolutely. A little bit of blood, sweat and tears in between as well to get your turns.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yep. Yes, make sure you do so appropriately in a safe way, or with someone that's showing you the ropes. Oh, very good. Well, this brings us to our last dot point here, entertainment. How can you save some money on some entertainment on your next ski holiday, based on the things that we've done in the past? Any ideas?
Rich, I'll take this one. If I'm at my favourite resort of Mount Hotham, then generally the entertainment's served up on a platter by the general store. Normally, whether that's food and beverage entertainment or perhaps a DJ Eddie show on Monday night, there's always some entertainment there at the local pub of Mount Hotham. That's my tip for entertainment. Perhaps down the bottom of the hills as well, there's always some entertainment in the local establishments as well.
Yeah, I was thinking it's free to use that life-size chessboard down at Dinner Plain, isn't it, Ferg? Is that out and about in winter?
Yeah, you normally got to dig down to it given the meters of snow that fall at Dinner Plain. And that actually brings up a point. There's a ultimate frisbee golf course there as well. Mm. There's many different things. And Rich, I reckon one time you brought your bike up to Dinner Plain and we were going to go shred the trails in, it was end of September, I think. So the snow had all just melted. And I think we got out lucky not losing a derailleur there. There was just sticks all over there.
Sticks everywhere. we did ride over some snow at some point too.
the most sticks I've ever seen on a trail. If you've got your mountain bike and you're looking for some entertainment, just wait till the trails have all been cleared there. That's my tip. Have you got any entertainment tips, Rich?
Well, yes. I mean, you can spend a lot of money, you know, doing the fancy things up at a resort, you know, paying extensive amounts of dollars to go into an ice bar or something like that. I can do remember that in New Zealand, you know, various gimmicky things. But I would recommend, you know, carrying a lightweight game of some sort. Yes. And something that's very fun that most people will get around, and then playing it at some sort of locals pub, and then even getting some of the locals involved if they show interest. Now, we've done this a few times with the game of Perudo. Now, sadly, we haven't been able to have the annual national championships of Perudo.
Yes, I'm still the defending champion, world champion of Perudo.
Really? Really?
And is it double or nothing next year for the 2023? Also take
well, it has to be.
Sorry, 2022 also take the 2021 event.
It has to be. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Must be. And, you know, Perudo is dice of the Andes. It is a dice game based on, you know, betting what you have in your hand. And I won't get into the rules, but it's very fun. Now, this could be, you know, Monopoly Deal, you know, or whatever little game you've got. But, you know, just having a few rounds of that in the pub after dinner can really be something to look forward to. And we certainly have loved that game over the years. And I cannot wait to play it again in the future. Very good. Well, lads, I'm sure we could work through a whole bunch of topics, but keeping in mind that we are a 30-45 minute show, I think that is a pretty good list for the time being, unless you guys want to add anything else.
No, I'm all good. I think we've furnished the fellow listener out there with plenty of things of what they should and shouldn't do to save a bit of dosh in the future.
Yeah, I think I'm all out of tips and tricks, and I think I got a few court cases coming up.
Yeah, you better start saving for those legal fees.
Yeah.
Yes, the cleaners in town will be actively patrolling the various cubicles that are free for the public to use from this point on. Anyway, thanks, fellas. Been another good episode. I believe we'll probably have one more, and that'll be the season finale after this. So thanks, everyone, for tuning in throughout the season. But we are coming to an end as the ski season starts closing down. But I want to thank you two gentlemen as well. Thank you so much. And, we'll see you next week, I suppose.
Yes, thank you very much, Rich. Thanks, Ferg.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me on, keeping the stoke alive.
Very good. Righto. We'll catch you later.
See ya.
Ciao.
Those telly guys hope you have enjoyed this program. We'd love to hear from you. Please get in touch at thosetellyguys@gmail.com. If you enjoyed this show, please subscribe for more fun episodes. Otherwise, you can find us on Instagram. Thank you.